deal collapse.
Many Israelis worry the danger lies within. Right-wing members of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's ruling coalition, Ben Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, have threatened to collapse his government if Hamas still exists after the hostages are released.
While speaking in front of hundreds of Navy members in honor of the Navy's 250th birthday, Trump says this when it comes to the government shutdown.
Despite the current Democrat-induced shutdown, we will get our service members every last penny. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
CBS's Chanel Call.
A new CBS News poll finds many Americans are frustrated with the shutdown, disapproving of the White House, Republicans in Congress, and Democrats in Congress nearly equally. The poll also finds that those surveyed are worried about the impact the shutdown could have on the economy, with 49% saying they're very concerned and 31% saying they are somewhat concerned.
In what some might call a gotcha move, the Trump administration deployed hundreds of California National Guard members to Oregon overnight after a judge blocked the administration from deploying Oregon State's Guard to Portland. Mayor Keith Wilson.
The number of federal troops needed or wanted in our city is zero. This is the latest move, and it is a clear example of a federal government undermining local governance, escalating conflict, and diverting attention from the real needs of our communities.
In Texas, new information after four children were found with gunshot wounds in a car outside Houston. Two of them died. Brazoria County Sheriff Bo Stallman with more on the mother, Oneida Ramelius.
The evidence shows that this tragedy has occurred inside of the vehicle and that Romulus, the mother of the children, is a shooter.
The 31-year-old is being charged with two counts of murder and two counts of aggravated assault. In Washington, D.C., the annual Red Mass marking a new term for the Supreme Court, which begins in the morning. A man was arrested outside the church, charged with having a Molotov cocktail. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. We offer auto, home, and commercial auto insurance, plus a variety of business insurance options. Visit Progressive.com today.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
Getting ready for game two. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Cubs and the Brewers held workout sessions at the ballpark before game two of the divisional series. First pitch 8:08 tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Quinn Priester had been expected to start for the Brewers. Manager Pat Murphy has changed his mind.
Murph, what are your pitching plans for tomorrow?
Yeah, Ashby's going to start. I don't know if Priester will be next. I really don't.
The Cubs will start lefty Shota Imanaga. How did they react to that 9-3 loss to the Crew on Saturday? Manager Craig Counsell.
You know, look, the game got away from us early, so it's not like it did, right? It got away from us. So, man, it's a loss, and you move on from it quickly. There's no penalty. It's one loss. Doesn't count for more how you lose. We didn't lose well, but we lost, and you move on. That's how the clubhouse felt.
That's Cubs manager Craig Counsell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers likely tonight, some rumbles of thunder and a low around 51. For Monday, partly sunny, highs around 63. Monday night, partly cloudy, lows in the upper 30s. Sunny and breezy on Tuesday, 63 degrees. Low 60s for lows Tuesday night.
It's 73 at our studios. Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'll be joined by the incomparable, the indefatigable Congresswoman Gwen Moore, talking all things shut down and who really bears the responsibility. Hint, it's Trump.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them, with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go. Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday afternoon. We have made it through another week, which these days always feels like quite the accomplishment. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Friday, and it is our last day of Civic Media's multi-state text to win Go for the Green and Gold contest. I'm going to be dropping the word to get qualified to win for the second to last hour of the contest, I believe, at 5 o'clock, in that 5 o'clock hour. So don't go anywhere. We got great guests stacked up for you for the entire show, but especially you want to get in that last shot to get entered to win one of our daily prizes of $200 or gold jewelry. And of course, our grand prize to indoor, emphasis on indoor club level tickets to watch Green Bay take on Minnesota on November 23rd at noon, plus a gas card to get you to the game and back, a $1,500 plus value. So stay tuned for the opportunity, the last opportunity on this program to get entered to win. But right now we got one of my favorite guests, my colleague here at Civic Media, our political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. Always always a treat to recombobulate with you in these discombobulating times.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. I wanted to focus in with you as our resident expert on political maneuverings, all things Wisconsin, because we've had some additional entrants into the Wisconsin gubernatorial race, making the Democratic field quite crowded. We're going to focus on the real top tier contenders that we've got in the race this afternoon. But I thought it might be helpful to do sort of like a little side-by-side comparison of these top five candidates, including current Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, current state representative from the 76th District, Franny Hong, current state senator from the 26th district, Kelda Royce, current lieutenant governor, Sarah Rodriguez, and former CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, Missy Hughes. What is their experience outside of elected office? What have they done in elected office? What are their main policy platforms? Where do they sit sort of on the Democratic, I don't know what even to call it. Are they more left as sort of centrist type Dems? What are we looking at here? So let's just jump right in. When we look at experience outside of elected office, who has got that in this current field, Dan?
Yeah, well, like you mentioned, we've got a growing crowded field here. Sarah Rodriguez, lieutenant governor, announced right away. But the month of September saw, four more bigger announcements for governor. So this is, and we may have more to come as well, too.
Indeed.
But you mentioned the experience, you know, outside of government. I think Missy Hughes probably brings that more than a number of the other candidates here. She was the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, the WEDC, under Tony Evers from 2019 up until she resigned the position right before she launched her campaign. But before that, she was an executive with the company Organic Valley for I think it was 17 years that she was with the company, and then most recently as an executive. So I think she, you know, really put herself out there as I think the phrase was a Democrat who understands the economy. So she is somebody who comes from that private sector background before she joined WEDC. And, you know, WEDC under Scott Walker was riddled with all sorts of crises and you know, allegations of corruption and pay to play and like that kind of thing. And, you know, that was kind of the central organization that was doing some of these big tax dollar giveaways to companies like Foxconn and what have you. The organization has really reformed significantly under Hughes and under Evers to really be much more of a Main Street focus. And I think, you know, Wisconsin in some of the COVID recovery dollars and allocating some of those really emphasized Main Street small business as opposed to always, you know, kind of going after the big business the way the big out of state whatever is that the Scott Walker administration was going after. So a big change in the mission of that group. And yeah, she's got the private sector experience to go with it.
Yeah. One of the interesting things is you don't hear about the WEDC in the news. There's no corruption scandals. You're not hearing about it. And that actually is reflective of exactly what you said, which is it's been basically controversy free. No bad publicity that I can recall, and a focus on Main Street smaller businesses and growing small businesses. And folks, if you forgot, where the heck did the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation come from? It used to be the Wisconsin Department of Commerce. Scott Walker got rid of that, created what many Democrats allege to be sort of a Walker preferred large business slush fund, hence all of these allegations. So it's been very good, in my opinion, to see steady stewardship at the helm of the WEDC, as well as that renewed focus on smaller businesses, Main Street businesses, by Hughes as the CEO. Of course, Sarah Rodriguez also has some pretty extensive experience, both in private sector healthcare. She was an RN, worked in an emergency department in Baltimore, but she also then went to work and actually worked within government at the Centers for Disease Control. So while that was within government, she was actually running something, which I think is always an incredibly important set of experiences. Tell us a little bit about Senator Roy's experience outside of her elected office. She had some background as well, not just in government.
Not just in government, but she, you know, she's been a state senator now for about 5 years, and before that was with was it Gnarl Pro-Choice? And has run her own small business as well, so she's got, you know, a pretty interesting set of experiences. And I do wonder if some of her background is going to lead her to get some of the endorsements of groups that are very involved in reproductive rights. I think that was one thing that was part of her campaign for governor in 2018. When she ran then, she got a lot of endorsements, you know, from the Emily's Lists and the like. And I wonder if that is going to be, you know, another piece of her candidacy looking ahead in this race as well.
Yep. As Dan mentioned, Senator Royce worked at NARAL, Pro-Choice Wisconsin. She also worked as a private attorney for a few years at a Madison-based law firm. And she, back in, I think, like mid-2010s-ish, maybe a little earlier than that, had founded a virtual sort of online real estate company. So she's got kind of a mixed bag of background. When we turn and then look, and of course, folks know Representative Hong, Franny Hong. She has worked in hospitality for quite some time. She brings that to bear, again, working
in the restaurant industry, hospitality service industry. Absolutely. Yeah. She's
clearly
she
a big deal in Wisconsin.
A restaurant in Madison, worked for a bunch of different kitchens in the city as well. So, yeah, that's an interesting component, too, for her candidacy, that working class background that she has.
Absolutely. When we turn to David Crowley, he has spent most of his professional and political career working on campaigns and government. He originally worked on Senator Russ Feingold's campaign. He was a legislative aide. He was then elected to the Wisconsin State Senate. I think what sets Crowley apart, though he doesn't have that private sector experience, is the fact that County Executive Crowley has run one of the largest municipalities in the state of Wisconsin for now a considerable amount of time. I call this actually doing the thing, being responsible for the execution of legislation. When you pull back, Dan, and you look at these candidates and you're looking at their experience, to me, I always am looking for folks that are doers, that have this practical experience, that have been responsible for bottom lines or making things work. Who do you think really stands out top of the heap from that experiential, hey, I know how to make things work and get things done perspectives?
Well, for one, I think, you know, we're talking through these candidates. I think this is a really strong bench. Like, yeah. I think this is a really good group of candidates, and they all bring, you know, some different pieces to the table. I think you mentioned Sarah Rodriguez with her healthcare background, Missy Hughes with more of like the farm and agriculture business background, Francesca Hong, Madison service industry. And then David Crowley, I think, too, just being having the experience both in the state assembly and as the executive of Milwaukee County for the past 5 years. You know, he has that interesting mix that the rest of the candidates don't have as well. So I don't really think there is like a clear, you know, somebody who walks into this race is especially with the candidates that we have now, walks into this as a clear front runner. You know, I think there are still some candidates who might be announcing in the not too distant future or weighing a decision or whatever it might be. But I think of the candidates that we have now, I think you can talk about certain strengths that each of them have. And I think that is what makes for a really interesting conversation. And we might get some, you know, perhaps we get some good debates, good conversation. And now's the time to be having that for the Democratic Party as it really searches for a path forward.
And thank you, Dan, for correcting. Again, County Executive Crowley was elected in the state assembly. Put these folks on the political spectrum, if you will, for Democrats. You know, my sort of finger in the air sensibility about this would be that you'd maybe think of Representative Hong and Senator Royce as a bit more on the left. Perhaps Missy Hughes, Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez, David Crowley, maybe a little less left. Do you agree? What's your sense of where they sit on that left political spectrum?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think if you're looking just the progressive moderate kind of divide that we've seen in the Democratic Party for some time, you know, I think Representative Hong is going to be, you know, kind of your unapologetic progressive in this race. But again, she has really focused her campaign in the outset on a lot of kitchen table type issues like childcare, healthcare, things like that. And then you're right. I think, you know, Roy's has been a little bit more, you know, probably not to the quite to the left as Representative Hong, but probably still, you know, she's a Madison representative. She's represented a very blue district for quite some time. So she's probably more to the progressive end of this as well. But again, like with Crowley, with Rodriguez, with Hughes, I wouldn't exactly say that any of them are, you know, off the deep end to the left or just like basically, you know, kind of Republican light moderate. I wouldn't put any of them really in that camp, but I do think that like you need some consensus builders there too. And I think that's where I think Crowley could potentially carve out a little bit of a lane here. I can bring together some of the you know, the progressive left and the centrist wing of the party. And I think he's got examples of doing that in Milwaukee County too. And again, you talked about him being a doer, you know, somebody who has a record of accomplishment and somebody who's going to be, you know, are you sending signals of what you might want to do or to camp out in a certain lane? Or are you taking a more pragmatic approach that can bring in all sorts of different, you know, wings of this big tent party that the Democratic Party needs to be?
Well, and I think the county executive, David Crowley, has actual credibility with some legislative Republicans. He was in rooms with them. I think he was fairly positively received. We'll see what that translates into. I'll be watching to see how the primary plays out. Do we see the inevitable pivot from primary to general with this diverse slate of candidates? Big thanks to Dan Schaefer, creator of the Recombobulationary. You can find it on Substack. You should subscribe. And of course, political editor here at Civic Media. We got Jeremy Janine coming up next from Urban Milwaukee. We talk about the claims that the city is spending those sales tax dollars on raises and debunk that myth next. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Is violent crime in the U.S. higher than 25 years ago? No. Violent crime is lower nationally and in major cities than 25 years ago, according to FBI and Justice Department data. In 2023, cities with 250,000 or more people reported 771 violent crimes per 100,000 residents, down from 1,093 in 2000. Nationally, violent crime has stayed below 400 incidents per 100,000 residents for a decade, compared to about 500 in the late 1990s. Pew Research reported a 49% drop in violent crime, which includes murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, since 1993. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
He scores! Wow! He ripped one over the glove of Heaney!
It's on!
And save! Badgers win the shootout!
In America's college hockey capital.
Empty net!
Badger hockey lives here.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric Inc., Rapids Transmission, Junkyard Bar & Grill, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I like a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Friday, one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor and, of course, creator of the Recombobulation Area. You can find his work on Substack. Continuing our theme of all things Wisconsin and local, happy to be joined once again by the founder of Urban Milwaukee, Jeremy Janine. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
So we've got the two biggest municipal budgets moving forward now in southeastern Wisconsin, both the city of Milwaukee as well as Milwaukee County's budget now in their debate cycle, being handed over to their respective legislatures for debate and changes and amendments. A lot of consternation coming from the city's budget, accusations from the Milwaukee Police Association that the city's got its priorities all wrong. They cannot seem to come to a contract, as well as Republican State Senator Van Wongard saying that, or claiming, I think, incorrectly, that the city spent 90 to 90% of the revenue it received from the Act 12 sales tax local government funding bill that was passed back in 2023. Can you help us sort out fact from fiction here, Jeremy?
There's a lot of moving pieces here. And I can say the one thing is the fact
the claim by the senator that the city spent 90 to 99% on raises is false. There were certainly raises in there, and the big part of that is because going back to Act 10 in 2010, 2011, the city's been heading towards this fiscal cliff, and so it's quit giving raises. Elected officials haven't had a raise since 2008, and in 2020, I gotta get my years right in my head, in 2023, they voted to give future elected officials in 2024, which was largely the same group of people, a 15% raise. But that's 15% spread over the period of 2008 to 2024. Similar things are happening for everyone from the city librarians to garbage truck drivers to electricians, that they were getting raises. And that was a real choke point, less so than being an elected official, but the city couldn't hire electricians. It was had staffing issues all over. So it had to give these raises. So you can get the visual impact if you mess with the statistics enough that, yeah, it looks like all this money, just we gave you this sales tax, we being the Republican legislators, and then you spent it all on raises. But the city was already spending a lot of that money on overtime, and now it's just spending it on hiring more people when it comes to garbage truck drivers, health department employees. And then the big elephant in the room is this expired police union contract. And since 2008, the police union, because they're still protected by collective bargaining, has received almost 30% increase in base pay. They're about to get another big increase, which the mayor says, hey, they deserve it. Their labor agreement expired in 2022. They're now going to arbitration on a new labor agreement, which ironically, by the time that arbitrator rules, will probably require the process to start over again. But the police union's about to get what certainly seems like a big raise. And the big question is back pay, which could blow a hole in this year's budget if the arbitrator says, yes, you owe millions of dollars in back pay. But Republicans at the state level are coming out in support of the police association and really distorting what's happening on the ground level.
So to summarize here, the police officers have received since 2008 a 30% increase in base pay. Many, many officers have double time, significant overtime on top of their base salaries as well. Over that same period of time, elected officials received no increases at all. So their 15% increase, which was voted on in 2023, which is required under state law to do it before the next election cycle. Again, that is not, you know, not just, oh, they get this every year. It was 15% off of what they were earning from 2008 that had not changed one bit. All of this within the much broader context of what has become a real existential hiring problem in certain job classifications at the city and in public service writ large. So basically no truth to Senator Van Wongaard's statements. Why are they what's the upside and the distortion? I get the tactic from MPA's perspective to try to negotiate, create public pressure for the best possible contract they can get. That's collective bargaining, and they're doing it in a public sector employment setting. Why are Republicans lying about this?
It's all just electoral politics and collective bargaining in public. If you do dive into the numbers, is you'll see the fire department looks like they just got a huge, huge, huge salary increase. And that's because their new labor agreement just went into effect. So it looks like at the moment, if you look just at the numbers, the police department on the bottom, fire department on top. If you wait until that arbitrator rules, you're going to see both the police and fire appear on top.
Yeah, there every bargaining cycle for both police and fire unions in the city. This happens in most municipalities. One, the arbitration, if it's required, or even the agreement itself, typically ends up occurring after the years that agreement covers. So once the raise is agreed to, there are these massive lump sum payments in the form of back wages that go to these employees. And again, that's posing significant challenges, especially in the city, given its fiscal tipping point, pain point, if you will. When we look at fire and police within the city of Milwaukee, have they been taking up a greater proportion of the city's overall tax revenues and budgets when you go all in for their pension, healthcare, and wages?
They have, but the city got that big revenue boost with Act 12, got that 2% sales tax, roughly $200 million. The requirements are that it first goes to pensions, which it's been critical to avoid a fiscal cliff there. And then it has increased staffing levels. So there are now both more firefighters and police officers on city streets as a result of it.
Folks, thanks so much to Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. Check out their great reporting and work, making us all smarter here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks so much, Jeremy. Stay tuned. We got more coming up with for everybody next. Specifically, we have a great guest talking about the impact of AI data farms here in the state of Wisconsin. You're going to want to know about what's going on in your neighborhood. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
CBS News Brief. Israel and Hamas are preparing for negotiations, as we hear from correspondent Deborah Patta in Jerusalem.
Talks around the logistics of a hostage prisoner swap begin in Egypt tomorrow. There's pressure on both Hamas and Israel to seal the peace deal.
Tuesday marks 2 years since the Hamas attack that sparked the war. President Trump is sending National Guard members to Chicago and Portland, Oregon, despite the Democratic governors of both states fighting the move in court.
We send in what's ever necessary. People don't care. They don't want crime in their cities. And we're doing it, and we're doing it well. We're doing it like nobody's ever done it before.
The troops going into Portland are not from Oregon, as CBS's Willie James Inman reports.
Gavin Newsom has said the White House is deploying 300 National Guard troops from California to Portland instead, a move he called a breathtaking abuse of power.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
Getting ready for game two. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Cubs and the Brewers held workout sessions at the ballpark before game two of the divisional series. First pitch 8:08 tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Quinn Priester had been expected to start for the Brewers. Manager Pat Murphy has changed his mind.
Murph, what are your pitching plans for tomorrow?
Yeah, Ashby's going to start. I don't know if Priester will be next. I really don't.
The Cubs will start lefty Shota Imanaga. How did they react to that 9-3 loss to the Crew on Saturday? Manager Craig Counsell.
You know, look, the game got away from us early, so it's not like it did, right? It got away from us. So, man, it's a loss, and you move on from it quickly. There's no penalty. It's one loss. Doesn't count for more how you lose. We didn't lose well, but we lost, and you move on. That's how the clubhouse felt.
That's Cubs manager Craig Counsell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Peaky Blinders is the gift that keeps on giving to its loyal fans. Netflix and the BBC have announced that the popular show about the Shelby crime gang is getting a 2-season sequel, according to Screen Rant. The period drama, created by Stephen Knight, will have 6 episodes in each season that will air on BBC One in the UK and Netflix worldwide. The new seasons will pick up after the Peaky Blinders movie, also written by Knight, called The Immortal Man. There is no release date yet for the film, which stars Cillian Murphy, Stephen Graham, and Rebecca Ferguson. There were rumors that the movie would be the end of the franchise, but that no longer appears to be the case. Knight says that the show will follow a new generation of Shelbys in the sequel. The Immortal Man will act as a bridge between the original show, which ran for 6 seasons, and the new iteration. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
...97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers likely tonight, some rumbles of thunder, and a low around 51. For Monday, partly sunny, highs around 63. Monday night, partly cloudy, lows in the upper 30s. Sunny and breezy on Tuesday, 63 degrees. Low 60s for lows Tuesday night.
It's 73 at our studios.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, book bans have not gone away, but we tend to forget about it. We're going to talk about book bans and what that means for our children. Please join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and a happy Friday, one and all. Big thanks to Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee for joining us to kick off this Friday afternoon program. I'm super excited to talk with our next guest. She is Representative Lee Snodgrass of Assembly District 52, which used to be Assembly District 57. We'll talk a little bit about that. She's here to talk about an important piece of legislation that she has introduced dealing with voter engagement, specifically accessibility for folks that may have disabilities and encouraging young voters to get involved, as well as providing an opportunity for elected officials in the state to actually learn something about how elections and polling work in reality, to hopefully tamp down on some of the misinformation. We're going to get to all of that. But big hearty welcome to you, Representative Snodgrass. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Maggie. Thank you.
Yeah, it's such an important topic. I want to get to that, but please introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell them a little bit about who you are. I know that you've been the second vice chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. I know you've worked in communications and outreach for the Girl Scouts of the Northwestern Great Lakes region. But who are you, and why, oh my goodness, in these such very trying political times, did you decide to run for political office?
That's a huge question. I'll do my very best. After the 2016 election, with those results, I had been very involved in the campaign as a volunteer. And at that point, with those results, I was like, clearly more has to be done. So I ran for county party chair in Outagamie County. In my time as county party chair, I tripled our membership. We got a brick and mortar location. We were able to diversify our membership base. We were able to sort of empower others to lead. And I was happy to leave that in the excellent hands of Emily Steffes now. And after that, you really, the next thing is, part of what you do as a chair is you commute to run for office. In 2018, I ran against Roger Roth for a state Senate race. I did not win that, but I got about 47% of the vote against a long-term incumbent in leadership. And I thought, this is probably something I should keep doing. So when Amanda Stuck left the 57th, I ran for that position, was elected in the middle of COVID. We were the COVID class. Couldn't knock doors. Everything was about phone calls. I was sworn in by Governor Evers by Zoom in my kitchen. Yeah. And I arrived at the Capitol with everything boarded after January 6th. So it's been a tumultuous, I'm in my third term. It's been very tumultuous. Why do I keep doing this? Because I keep pressing forward, banging my head on those marble walls in the Capitol, and I think I can make a difference.
It's so important that people like yourself, with such a diverse background, you've lived in different parts of the country, your folks brought you to Wisconsin when you were a young woman, that, for me anyways, I really love to see elected officials that have done other things other than simply run for office. I think that outside experience is so essential to helping have the most informed and in-depth discussions about how to make things better for Wisconsinites. Speaking of which, the way that we do that, the way that we ensure that our elected officials are responsive to us, that we've got policies that are serving working families in this state, is by voting. You have recently introduced an incredibly important piece of legislation. I'm going to call it that. And you did so with one of your Republican colleagues, Although that colleague, Representative Scott Krug, introducing a different piece of legislation, but it's all about voting. Tell us specifically about your bill package and what it proposes and why you think this is so important.
Yeah, the Democratic bill package is the Vote Bill Package. That stands for Voter Outreach, Training, and Education. And essentially, it's a package of bills that increases accessibility for those who may have trouble getting to the polls, those living with a disability or the elderly. It increases education for young people in schools and makes it easier for them to get access to materials so they can register to vote. And it also does a little bit of training. It provides a checklist. Disability Rights Wisconsin did an accessibility report about voting, and we made sure we included some of the gaps that they had in there. Because at the end of the day, my goal is to encourage participation in democracy. Of yes. course, I'm a Democrat. Of course, I want people to vote for Democratic politicians and policies. But I want more than anything else for people to participate. And we have to remove barriers because those barriers still exist.
Yeah, it's one of the pieces that I picked up on. I am an economist and a lawyer. And one of the things that I spend a goodly amount of time reading about is behavioral economics. Stay with me, Lee. Okay. I'm going to bring it around. And one of the innovations of behavioral economics, which basically says, let's understand how human beings actually, how their brains work in reality, not with this fictionalized reasonable person that's always profit maximizing. We do all kinds of irrational things, but to understand how people actually operate in the world, one of the insights of behavioral economics is that people, when they get their driver's licenses, because you have to usually provide a birth certificate, would automatically be registered to vote, thus encouraging the participation of younger people. This has been opposed by Republicans, but I thought it was very interesting that an element of your vote Democratic bill package, again, that stands for Voter Outreach, Training, and Education, included an element of pre-registration if folks are going to be 18 by the time the next general election comes around. I thought this was a fabulous innovation. I think it doesn't go far enough, but I thought that was an incredible, we should be figuring out in these times how to ensure that citizens, young people to the elderly, disabled folks, college students are able to vote, that access is so critical. Again, you mentioned where some of the ideas came to fill some of the gaps as identified by Wisconsin's preeminent disability advocacy organization. How did you identify some of the other ideas that make up this voter outreach, training, and education bill package?
This is really a great story because, you know, legislators, we come from, as you mentioned, varying backgrounds. We're not experts on everything. We have to be, Jill of all trades, master of hopefully some. And a lot of it comes from constituents. And I was talking to a constituent and a friend, and we were talking about how Republicans were just basically promoting election lies about the security of Wisconsin's elections. And I said, it's like they just don't understand. They have never even volunteered or worked at the polls. And she said, well, I think you're probably in a position now where you can pass something that would require them to understand. And that was a huge light bulb. And we looked into it. We made sure it was constitutional. But I always tell people, if something was wrong with my car and I took it to a mechanic and they said, you can watch everything that I do here to see that I'm doing it right, I would have no idea if they were doing it right because I'm not a mechanic and I don't have a background in that kind of engineering. And the same goes for election administration. We have people who have basically maybe voted, but other than that, they have not understood the series of checks and balances and security measures. And for me, learning by doing is the best way to retain something. And I feel that as state legislators, they look to us for advice and expertise and assurance. And in this time, we need to be able to provide that assurance through direct experience. So that's where that one came from. It would require all elected officials to work as a poll worker on an election where they're not on the ballot.
It's brilliant. And here's why I say that. As you rightly point out, and folks, if you're just joining us, we're having a discussion this half hour with Representative Lee Snodgrass. She represents Assembly District 52. She's been in the state legislature since 2021. I say this because, as you rightly point out, Representative, legislators are generalists. There are bills about virtually everything that you can think of. No one can have deep expertise in all of these things. And a phenomenon that I often observe is that without getting that expert knowledge, whether by doing or talking to subject matter experts, often what you see are bill packages that are being crafted by folks that have access to legislators. Read people that cut really big checks and lobbyists, and legislators simply stick to the talking points. What I think is so incredibly powerful about your bill package and this Democratic vote, again, that's voter outreach training and education bill package, is that what you're saying fundamentally is, dear fellow legislators, if we want to have an intelligent discussion about voting rights, voting security, voter access, then you had best know something about this. If this was the one area, if this was the one area where legislators would engage and say, yes, I will work a polling place. I will see how this actually works. I'll be at a central count location. I will spend the time firsthand to gain that knowledge. I think we would be able to have a much more informed, less hyperbolic, and less partisan discussion about how to ensure that every citizen is exercising their franchise and has the ability to do so. I always bemoan the fact that we vote in general elections on Tuesdays, which is just galactically stupid, but that's legislation for another time. I just think that that is so powerful, Lee, and I applaud that, because how would a Republican, like, what would the rebuttal to that be? Like, no, I really don't want to know about that.
Maggie, you know, we're in an era where education is viewed as a risk to not following a certain ideology.
Mm.
I believe that education allows everybody to make their own personal informed decision. And if you are worried about people being educated about something, you might want to check what your ideas really are.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let me just ask a quick follow-up question about that. I know you got your undergraduate from Madison in English. There has been much bemoaning, we've got about a minute left, of what I'm going to call degrees in the social sciences and in areas like English, in the arts and sciences departments of universities. Tell people why English was such an important major for you, and why is it important to maintain these kinds of majors in our higher educational institutions?
Well, it's incredibly important because I have friends who graduated with very specific degrees who are now unemployed. And I used to say to people, I'm not trained for anything specifically with this degree, but I have the skills to do many things. And that has borne out in my history, in my career. I've worked for Kimberly-Clark as a consultant. I've worked for the Girl Scouts. I've worked for private paper industries. And every single place that I've worked, including the state legislature, one of the most important things and to get things done is the ability to communicate, to dissect complicated ideas into easily digestible thoughts. And that's a liberal arts degree.
That is a liberal arts degree. As someone who's, if I had a redo button, or we had, you know, the through the looking glass other version of yourself, I would have gotten an English degree myself and would hopefully be eking out a living as a writer. So I always want to talk with folks when they've got that background and that degree that I envy so much and think is so valuable in these moments where, again, education, the ability to communicate complicated ideas clearly, to explain things, is so important. I really value that. We're going to continue this great discussion with Representative Lee Snodgrass of Assembly District 21 on the other side. We're going to get into a little bit of her background as the former second vice chair of the Democratic Party. How do we bridge these gaps? How do we move forward together here in Wisconsin? So stay tuned, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Friday, everybody.
Reach reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent weeks, the level of activity from Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has increased quite a bit. There was a raid in Manitowoc at a Walmart parking lot where dairy workers were known to congregate, a series of arrests in Madison, and in Milwaukee, ICE is looking to expand its operations significantly by seeking office space downtown to go along with a new field office on the city's northwest side. This has been concerning for many, and not without reason. A recent large-scale ICE raid in an apartment building in Chicago saw reports of armed federal agents breaking down doors, U.S. citizens detained for hours on end, and children being dragged from their homes in the middle of the night. While the American immigration system has a host of problems, this kind of violent show of force is not an acceptable way to address these problems. And ICE also just received an injection of $45 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill, so it is imperative for all of us to hold ICE accountable and speak out when things go too far. Right now, things are going way too far.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Ladies and gentlemen, pets, imaginary friends, take a listen down memory lane and spread the 411 with 97.5 FM WFHR's Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape. If it was released from 1990 to 1999, we will play it Sunday nights 8 to 9. Send me your requests with your beeper, or maybe DM me on the socials, or email me james.maloff@civicmedia.us. Sunday nights 8 to 9 on WFHR's Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape. Booyah!
Step right up. Circus history is alive in Wisconsin.
The circus would come to town and whole cities would shut down. There wouldn't be school. The stores would be closed because everybody would go to the circus.
A big part of the circus, the wagons, and now what's believed to be the last bell wagon anywhere is at Circus World in Baraboo. Commissioned by the Ringlings in 1892, this 10,000-pound rolling musical instrument was the crown jewel of the circus parades.
There's parade wagons. Circus parades would have to get people excited to come see the circus. And so those are the very ornamented ones, lots of carving.
That's Jennifer Kronk. She's the curator of history at Circus World. Three other unique wagons owned by Feld Entertainment in Florida are also on loan for the next couple of years. It's a slice of Wisconsin and circus history right here, where you can relive the glory of the parade and echo of the bells calling you to the big top. I'm Terry Barr.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining us, happy Friday. One and all, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking this half hour with Representative Lee Snodgrass of the 21st State Assembly District. She just introduced a package of bills along with her fellow Democrats about voting outreach, education, and training, an incredibly important piece of legislation. And we were talking about some of the elements in there and wanting one of the pieces of the legislation is to require elected officials who are not judges to actually volunteer or become and work at polling places to see firsthand how our election processes work so that people can speak from a much more informed place when we're talking about legislation that impacts our election processes. One of the distinctions that I've been trying to draw for people is the understanding of what our election processes are, increasing access, making sure that citizens can exercise their franchise, that their voices can be heard, and all of the issues that surround gerrymandering, etc. I love your bill for that. I think we should also be able to understand, as perhaps a separate question, that we need to remain vigilant when it comes to election machine security and cybersecurity. And I just wanted to offer you the opportunity to comment on that, Lee.
So It's one of the things that I don't think people understand. So Badger Books is a tool that people use in voting. That is not connected to the internet. There are lots of parts of our state voting system that are not connected to an internet for the very reason of we don't want to have any sort of breach, security breach, some cybersecurity breach. I think it's really important to ask questions. There is always an election captain at each voting location. And if you have a question about what you're seeing, about how something's being put into a machine, about how a machine may be moved in a room, you can ask them and they will, if you're polite and not antagonistic, they will answer that for you. Clerks, municipal clerks, election workers, volunteers, they want you to understand and they want you to see that it's secure. The checks and balances from how ballots are moved, where they're put, where they're stored, who has access to that, all of that, they take incredibly seriously.
Yes.
Outagamie County has a Republican clerk and their municipal clerk is more, I would say, Democratic. These two women do an excellent job and take their job very seriously. I have absolute faith in them. And the goal is to make sure we have that level of faith in all clerks, municipal or county.
One of the things that I recommend for folks these days, having been in the room, advised the Milwaukee County Election Commission during the 2020 recount, having been an election observer, is we're using machines now to cast our ballots, but the ballots get printed out. Go ahead, take a moment, double check your ballot, make sure it reflects your desired votes. Lee, because you also have served previously as the second vice chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, I wanted to ask you the question that I think is defining a lot of the political moment, which is, I know that there are conservatives of good faith out there that are incredibly disappointed and frankly very worried about what the second Trump administration is doing and represents. I know that there are independents that feel similarly. I know that there are people that feel betrayed that the president is breaking promises. And we've got folks in the Democratic Party that want more progressive change faster. How do we build this big tent moving into the midterms in 2026 that leaves footholds for everyone that's concerned about what's happening to our country, yet still moves forward on some of Democratic basic progressive values?
It is really hard. You have to have incredibly nuanced conversations. And I have a lot of those, frankly. My district is, even though I won handily, it's pretty purple. So every time I go to a door, I understand that I'm talking to somebody who, if they don't believe what I believe, or if they don't like a policy that I'm part of, I should not be shaming them for that belief. Everybody comes to their belief system with background that I don't know about. So my goal is to just sort of explain to them, this is why I feel strongly about this, and this is why I think this is best, and this is why I think this would help you as well. And you'd find that when you have very simple conversations about what you care about, what you're working on, and how you hope to help them in their lives, people are very receptive. I think we need to sort of stay in the kitchen table zone right now, the issues that everybody deals with every day. Let those other issues just sort of permeate around us, but let's focus in that center zone, and I think we can have some real conversation.
I'm going to ask this out of pure self-interest, and we've got just a smidge over a minute left, Lee, and that is this. How do we combat when we hear affirmative lies and misrepresentations? Because that I think is so challenging. If we just aren't operating from the same set of facts,
it's really
hard to return to our shared values.
So I've started doing something that's really interesting. When people tell me something about either defending the president or one of his policies that I find repugnant, I start to say to them, from what you're saying to me, I can see how that aligns with your values. And it stops them in their tracks. Mm-hmm. It makes them reconcile. Wait a minute. What value is this? And does it recognize with my values? Mm-hmm. And I find that's a very gentle way to get people to sort of think a little bit about what they're saying and how that might be connected to what they think they are and what they think they care about.
Yeah, that is one of the challenging moments. I struggle with it every day, how to leave, again, a door open, how to deal with some of the cognitive dissonance that I think is challenging people. And when we feel that, as you well know, as an English major and a communications expert, sometimes we dig our heels in even more. Representative Snodgrass, thank you so much for being here with us. What is, you're going to have the last word, your parting message to your constituents in the 21st District?
52nd district.
52nd. Do I keep saying that wrong? Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry, Lee. 52nd district.
My parting words is there is nobody that works harder for you than me. I'm telling you, I am deeply entrenched in this community, and everything I do, whether in Madison or here in the Appleton area, is for the people of my district.
I appreciate you being here with us. Keep us updated on your legislation. It's oh so very important. Again, folks, if you support this kind of work to make elections accessible, to increase education and training, reach out to your assembly representative and state senator. Tell them to support the Vote Act. Thanks so much to Representative Lee Snodgrass of the fighting 52nd Assembly District. Stay tuned, everybody. I'm going to be talking with Amy Barilow of Clean Wisconsin next about the impact of big AI data centers right here in Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. President Trump is federalizing Texas National Guard personnel for deployment to Oregon, Illinois, and possibly elsewhere. Trump's deployment of National Guard troops to Portland from California gets around a judge blocking use of Oregon troops, as CBS's Amanda Arden reports from Portland.
I've checked in with the Attorney General's office and the governor's office. Sounds like this has really caught them off guard. The Trump administration has found a loophole in the temporary restraining order that blocked the Oregon National Guard from deploying in Portland. What they didn't anticipate is that he would pull the National Guard from a neighboring state, California, and send them up here.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker issued a statement saying, quote, "We must now start calling this what it is, Trump's invasion." Talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza are expected to begin within hours in Egypt. Correspondent Deborah Pata reports.
Despite the current...
UNICEF's James.